It's been about 10 years since French pianist Alain Grimeau has recorded any Mozart. Her latest release is a concept album. It generates a fascinating dialogue between Mozart and the Ukrainian-born contemporary composer Valentin Silvestrov. The Messenger by Silvestrov is the title track of this recording, and it echoes the music of Mozart. And he creates a connection between the present and the world that existed before in this music. It's the recording you're going to be hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. Well, let me just start by asking you, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I mean, all things considered, we're still, well, I say we, and maybe I shouldn't. I know too little to be able to speak for everyone here, but I still imagine that we are amongst the luckiest people out there, so it would seem inappropriate to complain. As discouraging and depressing as the situation, is, it's still, in the big picture, we're still okay.
Wonderful. Well, let's dive right in and talk about your new recording. Your new release, The Messenger, was recorded right at the beginning of this year, pre-COVID, if you will, at least before we knew there was officially a pandemic looming. And it was created at an historic Mozart site in Salzburg, the Great Hall of the University. Tell me about that setting and why that created the right atmosphere for this recording.
Well, of course, being in Salzburg anyway, even though Mozart had issues with that town, and they didn't always treat him well. But I would not say that the hall itself contributed that much to the atmosphere of the recording. It's not my favorite space, actually. It's a little cold from the point of view of the sound, the color of the sound. So it probably would have been a more propitious environment to be in the Mozarteum, I guess, but it was impossible for a number of reasons. That said, the good news is, once you get in a space, regardless of what the space is like, if the right atmosphere is there musically and in terms of the affinities between the participating members, then it doesn't matter. You can actually easily transcend, the actual physical space and possibly some of its limitations. I mean, I'm sounding as if the space wasn't even good. That's not the case, but just a little cold in terms of the sound, yeah.
Tell me then about the atmosphere of the music making. Tell me a little bit about that. What was most memorable for you?
It was the effervescence, the warm-heartedness of everyone, and this feeling of naturalness. I mean, that's probably not even a word, but you know what I mean? Where this, in German, they would say Selbstverständlichkeit, where everything is just as it is meant to be, and it feels right. The energy is flowing, and everything is, it doesn't require any overly rehearsed moments or having to clarify things in terms of the conception or the tempo or the phrasing. You come together and it feels as if it was meant to be. And that was probably the most, special, gratifying part of the recording.
It's been about 10 years since you made your previous two Mozart recordings. And at that time, you confessed that, when you were younger, Mozart's lightness of being wasn't that fulfilling for you. How do you feel about Mozart now?
Well, I think because his lightness of being for me was always there was always a counterpoint to that, which was perhaps ignored, in my opinion, too much of the time, or missed or minimized. And for all of his transcendence and grace and elegance, there is something I always felt was lightly unstable. Even in some of the happiest moments in Mozart, and for me that makes even more sense when you look at the tragic, highly dramatic nature of the pieces in minor tonalities. They go hand in hand because one is sort of almost sort of artificially trying to convince itself that there is an alternative to this terror generated by the idea of death and the unknown on the other side of it. And for all of the tenderness and beauty and angelic, you know, nature of some of the more lyrical passages, I never really felt the lightheartedness was totally innocent. There's always this word that comes to mind, and it may be exaggerated, it may seem out of place, but this light hysteria to some of these passages. So I was always intrigued by this and not really knowing how to reconcile this perception with what was thought to be stylistically acceptable, certainly at the time, or maybe still now. Except of, you know, I'm starting to come to terms with it and find what I hope is a happy medium.
On this new recording, you're creating a dialogue between Mozart and the Ukrainian-born contemporary composer Valentin Silvestrov. Why did you decide to do that?
You know, I've always been interested in creating programs that are just a little different, more like a concert program would be, you know, where you curate it to have a first half, a second half, and to find some relation or some contrast between the different elements of the program. And I always, you know, wondered why a recording program was most of the time supposed to be, you know, monochromatic and have only the one composer. And even when I've recorded just the one composer, I've often brought together pieces that weren't necessarily obvious companions to one another. So I'm always interested in the composition of a program. And, you know, in this case, I felt that, you know, for me, Mozart is in that sense, I mean, a composer that speaks of a word that has really yet to come. And of course, in the case of Silvestrov, it's pretty much the diametral opposite, because it's a musical world which speaks of the past and resonates so well in an ethereal way, but also in a very, very profound way, which is turned to this world past. And so I thought it was interesting to have them, you know, facing each other, and more importantly, these three elements that I feel they share very strongly: this simplicity, clarity of textures and of form, and you know, this purity. I think I prefer this word to simplicity, because that sounds maybe a little negative or limiting or derogatory, but so this purity, this also this transparency of the textures. You know, Silvestrov says something about how music has to be so transparent, you have to be able to see all the way through to the bottom, and there's that very much also with Mozart's music. So transparency, and also this quality of impermanence, of something that is there, but as soon as you try to, you know, seize it, it vanishes. You know, it's almost too sacred, too inspired, and fragile. It's not really for this world in both cases. And that's why I wished to bring them together.
What do you think this music can offer us in these very daunting times, in these times of uncertainty?
Well, I mean, for me, music has always been the most powerful art form. And even though ultimately I suppose that's subjective, but it is something so visceral. You know, music is sort of the heartbeat of our existence. You could say it's soul. I mean, I can't imagine a life without music. You start with the sounds of nature. Look at even, I don't know, movies. I mean, if you don't have the soundtrack, then actually those images, as you know, beautiful and meaningful as they might be, or the storytelling, it really falls flat. And what I find absolutely wonderful about music is that it renders language totally, totally superfluous. And as wonderful as words can be, you can easily hide behind them. And with music, it's just simply the truth and the emotional spectrum that music can cover, the joy that it can bring you, the energy, the comfort. And even if it makes you sad, what it does is that actually, you know, enables you to face things not only as they are, but as they could be. And so I think it's an art form that can reveal, you know, the potential in each and every one of us, and it's an irreplaceable presence.
The Messenger is the title of the recording, and it's also the title of Silvestrov's piece. But choosing this at the title, it makes me wonder what your intention was. Who is the messenger?
So, you know, I always felt that the role of the interpreter is to be an open channel, really a medium between the world of the composer and the world of the audience, both individually and collectively. And so, of course, the choice of this title isn't entirely because I feel that that's our role with all of the music that we play. And for me, music, and that's why it's so powerful, I think it connects us with a world which is beyond the one we know. And so it's a bridge to the spiritual. And so it felt as if, you know, the messenger was actually a really good way to impart that message, hopefully subtly, but that's what I believe. And that's also very much what actually the piece itself, in the case of the Silvestrov work, that is so named. You know, he wrote it in the memory of his deceased wife, and you can really feel this homage and this also simply desire to connect with her in the world beyond.
You've selected only works in minor keys by Mozart for this recording. Why did you do that?
Because they are my favorites. I feel that they're the most essential. I've always had a predilection for dramatic pieces anyway. And in the case of Mozart, he didn't write many pieces in minor tonalities, and I feel they have a very special significance. They're usually very personal pieces for him, and I've always loved that notion of, you know, this sense of an appointment with destiny, with fate, which is very much felt in those works by Mozart.
I watched your video of the finale to the Piano Concerto in D minor, and it looked like you were saying something, kind of mouthing words or responding in some way. Are you sort of envisioning, maybe, I don't know, talking to the composer or having some kind of a physical reaction to the music?
No, I think I just can't help myself. I'm not even aware of the fact I do it. You know, it looks a little weird for sure when you see it after the fact, but it's, you know, I suppose it's like people who would have to move their hands in order to talk, and if you were to tie their hands behind their backs, then they probably couldn't even utter words anymore. I mean, something like that. I'm not even sure what I'm doing or what I'm saying, but it's probably in the excitement of the moment, the intensity of the moment, but I'm not saying anything specific. I hope I'm saying what needs to be said through the music.
Well, it's not like Glenn Gould, who was singing along, right?
Yes, although I have been known to do that too. I remember doing a recording of Brahms' First Piano Concerto live with Kurt Sanderling years and years ago. And I remember the producer just coming out of the control room, you know, sort of pulling his hair out and saying, "Yeah, will you just please be quiet in the second movement? You know, we can hear you singing and humming. This is really a problem through the microphone." And then fortunately, Kurt Sanderling intervening and saying, "No, let her be. This is how the music is, and what counts is the music. You know, don't interfere with that. This is bad for the music." And so I was very, very grateful to him for making clear that was okay, and that I didn't have to now have to be aware of this while playing. But no, so unfortunately, sort of out of control, I guess.
Do you have a section within the Piano Concerto in D minor that is a particular favorite of yours, a passage that you always look forward to playing?
Oh, yes. Well, there's the opening in the first movement. I mean, first of all, I wish I could play that opening of the orchestra. That's definitely a frustration. And then that first sentence of the piano comes in, and it's just arrestingly gorgeous. also endlessly sad but hopeful at the same time. You know, I always love those reconciliation of opposites in music. And so there is that, there is the development of the first movement, which I absolutely love, in all of its dramatic ramblings. And then the development of the second movement. This very stormy, tumultuous passage, and also with the very interesting interaction of the piano sound, which is so thick there, probably the thickest texture in the entire concerto. And, you know, with the woodwinds, it's just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful color.
What about with respect to each of the fantasias? Is there a section in there you'd like to bring to our attention?
In the D minor fantasy, it's the opening. Those arpeggios, which pretty much announce everything that you know, is to come. And in the C minor fantasy, it's this absolutely wild passage with all these, you know, triple croche and those chromatic progressions in the left hand. I absolutely love that moment. It's almost unheard of for Mozart, and just very, very special.
Silvestrov's The Messenger is a response to Mozart and also echoes the music of the composer. And he's paying tribute to what has gone before. Why is that so central to his art as a composer?
I could not really speak for him in the matter, but it is something that he reached later in life. It wasn't always part of his music. But this metamorphosis, you know, of his compositions towards that, you know, what he calls metamusic, I find it very humble in the approach to the writing. There is something actually very, very imaginative, very creative, because he's almost recomposing some of this music. And what is really interesting is that he's a master of illusion in that sense, because you are convinced that you've heard these pieces before, and some of them you actually haven't. They just sound like you could have. So, for example, in The Messenger, you think you're listening to some reminiscence of some Mozart piece, but that isn't even the case. And so it's even more troubling that way. It's very, very sophisticated, in fact, for all of that simplicity that emanates from the music. It's highly skilled.
Why do you think he is somewhat little known as a composer?
I wish I knew, and it's certainly not justified when you listen to the material and when you see the reaction of people to the music as well. It's powerful. There is a need for it, and people react very strongly to it. I'm not sure, you know, maybe something to do with being at the opposite end of the pendulum swing. I mean, some people just seem to, you know, not fit their times. But usually those people are the ones that will bring about the swinging of the pendulum in the opposite direction. So they may seem out of place in a short, you know, period of time, but they're usually the ones announcing the next direction. Who knows?
You've recorded both a solo and an orchestral version of The Messenger. Why did you decide to do that?
There were some reasons that weren't necessarily musical ones, but in this case, I find that it's interesting when you have a version which is by the composer himself for both, so the piano solo as well as the piano and string orchestra version. And I found it to be an interesting challenge to try and recapture the atmosphere of the piece in the solo version, which is hard to do because, of course, the piano, as magnificent an instrument as it is, is not, you know, doesn't provide you with natural sustain. And so you really have to go and find these colors. It's interesting work, it's challenging work. The piece somehow sounds even more fragile in the piano version. But honestly, I prefer the one with string orchestra. It's more varied in the colors, and it has, at least for me selfishly, when I'm there amongst them playing, there's something more central about these string colors in the writing of that piece. But it's always interesting to have the other perspective as well.
Yeah, the strings almost sound like kind of a wash of sound to me.
Yes.
At first I was like, is this the orchestra? It almost sounded like a synthesizer or that kind of effect. It was really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's mesmerizing because you don't know, you know, is it the actual thing? Is it the reflection of the thing? It's almost as if you look at a you know, cityscape and you're seeing the scene reflected in the glass, and you don't really know anymore what is reality, what is fiction. And the piece has that quality about it. It can be disorienting, and it's all the more, you know, marvelous because of it.
I was reading an interview that you did, I think, a year ago, before the global pandemic, and you said that traveling has always been and always will be a defining element of your life. And obviously now I'm guessing that's changed a little bit during the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about how your life has changed in this way?
Well, it is defining still in its absence, because my existence has always been, you know, rhythmically and sort of, you know, sequentially organized by those trips. I mean, they're the punctuation of the calendar. And so, and when that stops, it also brings a different perspective. And then you start to think of time as something of a different nature. I mean, it definitely teaches you to, which is something I've anyway always preached and I'm, you know, more or less good at. When I get to spend time with the animals, I'm better, because that's, you know, one of the things you do learn from them, and that you get to be at their contact is to just simply be instead of do always, you know, this notion of trying to focus on the human being aspect instead of the human doing, which is something we're so constantly programmed, you know, to be. And so it changes a lot of things. At the same time, traveling, especially lately, hadn't really been my favorite thing to do. It has become more and more of a hassle and waste of time and energy over the years. So the problem is, when it stops, you lose the very essence of, you know, your art form, which I think is really truly only incarnating itself when the music starts to resonate in the heart of the audience. And that, to me, can only happen optimally in one physical space. And so there you start to miss traveling, but that's really the only reason.
Thank you. The Messenger, a new recording from French pianist Alain Grimaud that creates a connection between the present and the world that existed before. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the absolute best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler, the producer of this podcast. I'm Julie Almacher.